Blog Talk Radio.
From deepest, darkest Africa, across the polar ice cap, spanning the jungles of South America, without a compass, without a map, Blog Talk Radio and Wildlife Educational Services presents Larry Batson's Wild World. Discover the wonders of the natural world with nationally known wildlife educator Larry Batson as we visit his wild world.
Hello, everyone, from the remote jungles of Clinton Falls, Indiana. This is Larry Batson, and you are listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on this magical network known as Blog Talk Radio as we prepare for a fantastic show tonight. In fact, a little bit later on, joining us, Elaine McAfee Bender is going to be here, and we're going to talk the British Invasion, the music of the 60s. She was right in the middle of it with lots of great stories and some of the bands that us old folks remember and still enjoy, and this is going to be a fantastic hour, so we hope you have the opportunity to spend it with us. If not, of course, you can download any of our shows after the broadcast, absolutely free of charge, at www.blogtalkradio.com/Larry-Batson, or go to my website, LarryTheAnimalGuy.com. We have a direct link to the broadcast, and we invite everyone to listen to each show, go back to the archives, and coming up very soon, I want to tell everyone, this is kind of new news for all of our listeners, that we will have a Larry Batson's Wild World Facebook page with all the information about past shows, and we're very excited about that, so we hope everyone decides to check it out, Larry Batson's Wild World, coming to Facebook. Tonight's program is it's going to be a good one. Of course, handling the technical responsibilities, our studio producer, Melissa Hovey, and Wayne Larson doing the technical engineering of our show. Jim Johnson is our musical editor, and from his massive Wild World News studios in Indianapolis, Indiana, Dr. Henry Day. Good evening, Doctor.
Good evening, Mr. Batson. How's everything at the Wildlife Preserve?
Well, we've had warm weather, but hey, you know, every time it gets 90 degrees, I think about January and February. And all of a sudden, all that complaining I thought I was going to do, I instantly forget. So I tell you the truth, I love the warm weather.
Well, I know your school season's over now.
Yes, it is. It's past tense. Of course, we did have an exciting weekend, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday.
Well, that's right. You were off to see our good friend Benny Williams in Washington, D.C.
We were. His big event Monday at the Big Pond next to the World War II Memorial, I will have to say. And once again, it was an outstanding event. We had a chance to see Jim Owens, who's been on the show with the Cast for Kids. And lots of youngsters, they bus in to go fishing for the day. And, of course, they put me on a golf cart with a park ranger with snakes and lizards and turtles and gators and tarantulas. And I have a chance to do programs for these youngsters. And it always is a treat, I will say, Dr. Day. Someday you're going to have to go with me on that expedition. And before I go any further,
that.
I want to thank the National Conservation Training Center, who's so nice to put me up for two nights while we're in Washington so I don't have to deal with the hectic pace of D.C. So I want to thank Steve Chase and Jeannie Harold for guiding me into Washington. It made an absolutely perfect trip, and we loved every moment of it. The following portion of Larry Batson's Wild World is brought to you by Alphabet Swamp, the new children's book by Cheryl and yours truly, Batson. Order your autographed copy today at www.LarryTheAnimalGuy.com or send check or money order for $10 per copy. And that's autographed, everybody. It's WES 4140 North, 600 West, Greencastle, Indiana, 46135. Shipping and handling is included.
It's now time from his broadcasting mecca in Indianapolis, Indiana, the distinguished Dr. Henry Day with the Wild World News.
This is Dr. Henry Day with the Wild World News for June 9th. Now, our first story tonight, we're going to call You're Never Too Old. We're heading off to Aurora, New York. Golden eagles, Cherokee, and Canyon produced a surprise eaglet at the Hawk Creek Wildlife Center. Now, why is this such a big story? Well, Cherokee is about 40 years old,
oh,
and her mate is about 20.
Oh,
Now, neither of the birds can fly.
Well,
they've been in captivity for most of their lives. Now, the good news is the chick, whose name is Legacy,
mm-hmm.
when it's grown, will be released into the wild.
That's an amazing story, Dr. Day. What a great way to start off this evening's Wild World News.
It is a pretty good story. Can
yes,
you imagine that?
What was the female's name?
Cherokee.
Wow.
Now, she's 40 years old and taking care of a baby.
That's fantastic. Well, good
and
for them.
And eagle life.
Yes.
That's a good story. Now, are you hearing the cicadas in your area yet?
No, we're not.
Well, I haven't heard them here in Indianapolis either. Now, usually that's a sign of summer. That means summer's knocking on the back door. Well, unfortunately, in Tennessee, they're out. Hooksville, Tennessee. Putnam County deputies, who responded to a 911 call about a loud machinery noise in the area, discovered that the caller and his wife were just being bugged by cicadas. Now, the cicadas, they're part of a population that emerges every 13 years. Now, the good news about this story is that there were no cicadas arrested.
that is good. Our jails are crowded enough.
Well, now, while we're talking cicadas, do you know how to quiet cicadas?
I don't have a clue.
Well, you'll have to go to Columbia, Missouri. They can tell you how. Now, a public health official in Missouri has asked an ice cream shop to stop selling its cicada ice cream, even though the customers love it.
Ooh.
Now, Sparky's homemade ice cream in Columbia sold out of its only batch of insect-filled dessert within hours of its June 1st debut. Now, here's the story. Employees collected the cicadas in their backyards, cleaned them, I guess, with little tiny washcloths, and then put them in the ice cream.
Oh, God.
Now, an environmental health chief with the county health department said that he had advised them against their use as an ingredient in the cicada ice cream.
You know, I've looked at thousands, because we had the big cicada hatching here years ago. I looked at thousands of them, and not one of them said tasty to me. I can't even imagine.
Yeah, I imagine their eyes were probably a little crunchy. I guess we'll have to go to something like maybe pistachios and call it cicada ice cream.
There you go.
All right, now here's a story that when I'm finished, everybody's going to say, aww.
Oh, okay.
Hamilton, Montana.
Mm-hmm.
A pair of Good Samaritans rescued five baby ducklings that fell in a storm grate while crossing a street in southwestern Montana.
Oh.
Now, the local newspaper reports that a woman who would only give her first name, Marty, pulled over when she saw the ducklings fall in the storm drain. Mm. Now, another passerby who incidentally his name was Larry helped her fish out the ducklings. Was that you?
No, it wasn't. I'm sorry to say I wasn't in on that rescue. I'd like to have been. Not me. Nope.
Well, good for them.
Absolutely.
Thank you for saving those ducklings.
We'll give them the Wild World Humanitarian Award.
That's right.
That's right.
All right, now for all you turtle lovers out there, Pensacola, Florida. Mark Nicholas, a biologist with the Gulf Islands National Seashore, said researchers have found six turtle nests on the beaches there, a year after the Gulf oil spill disrupted sea turtle nesting along the panhandle.
Well, that's wonderful. We like that story. Because
we do like that. We love those,
we
little,
love those baby
those
turtles.
Little turtles.
That's right.
Love them.
Yes,
now, if you
do.
Want to know how to light up your night,
yes.
Head off to Gatlinburg, Tennessee.
Ooh.
The Elkmont Entrance Road at the Great Smoky Mountains National Park is closed to motor vehicles and pedestrians nightly through this weekend to accommodate transportation service for visitors to view the synchronous firefly beetles. Now, visitors will be able to take a ride into the park on trolleys. Now, here in the Midwest, we usually call them lightning bugs.
Really? I never heard of that. That does sound like fun. Well, how many people show up for that deal?
Oh, lots.
Lots. Well, that's more than many, isn't it?
Lots more than many. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Well, let's head off to St. Louis, Missouri.
Okay.
The Endangered Wolf Center hopes a set of cute newborn pups will help its financial crunch. And that's going on all across the state. All the zoos and all across the country, all the zoos are having problems because of the recession. And well, anyway, the center's website is broadcasting video of six Mexican gray wolf pups born May 1st. Now, you can go to the endangeredwolfcenter.org and view them, and it's also on their Facebook. Now, the center hopes to capture the attention of the public and hopefully get some donations to help care for the new pups.
Well, I hope they do. Those are really cool, those Mexican wolves. They're kind of between, size-wise, they're between a coyote and a gray wolf, Alaskan gray wolf. So what a great idea. I hope that works out for them.
Well, we're heading off to the Indianapolis Zoo for the local news.
Oh,
what's the local news? Well, a 40-pound bottlenose Atlantic dolphin was born this last Friday about 5 a.m. to longtime resident Nova. Now, the unnamed mammal is believed to be a male, and he's doing fine. He's nursing great and bonding with his mother. But if you want to see the little baby, you can't quite get close to it yet. Don't rush off to the zoo hoping to see the new baby. For now, the young dolphin, the fourth born at the zoo, is being kept away from the public to give the animal time to bond with its mother. But here's the good news. The lower-level dolphin gallery and the dolphin dome remain open, and video of the mother and the calf can be seen on large screen monitors outside the entrance and the exit of the building.
Well, good for them. I hope mother and baby do bond, and soon they'll be on exhibit, and what a tremendous draw for the Indianapolis Zoo.
That's right.
Yes.
Now, here's some good news that you and your wife, Cheryl, will like.
Okay.
We're heading off to God's country.
Oh.
Where would that be?
That would be Colorado.
And we're heading off to your favorite place in Colorado.
Estes Park?
Estes Park, Colorado.
Oh, my.
Now, Trail Ridge Road in Rocky Mountain National Park has opened this last Monday. Heavy snow delayed the opening for a week. Now, Trail Ridge Road, as you know, is the highest continuous paved road in the United States, more than 12,100 feet.
It is. What a spectacular place. And sometime, not tonight, but in the future, I will tell the story about the time we spent a night on Trail Ridge Road during a blizzard and temperatures reaching 40 below zero in a Vega, a Chevrolet Vega.
Oh, my God. Yeah, we'll have to hear that story.
Not tonight, but we'll do that in the future. It was death-defying, believe me.
All right, well, here's our fun animal fact for the night. It's one of those things that you'll think about just as you're drifting off to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
The average lifespan of a hermit crab is 75 years.
Oh, really? Wow. I did not know that.
That's quite a lifetime.
That's a lifetime.
Well, that's the Wild World News for Thursday, June 9th.
Well, once again, an outstanding job by Dr. Henry Day. We'd like to thank him for all the efforts accumulating this fantastic news for the Wild World News broadcast. We want to tell everyone, check out my website, LarryTheAnimalGuy.com, and our brand-new Facebook page, Larry the Animal Guy and Friends, filled with photos and information about our animal family, and soon coming, Larry Batson's Wild World Facebook page. Also, a big thank you to Radiomom.fm and the home of the Radio Mom Shop, where you can save 50, 60, 70% on vacations, restaurants, and a variety of other goods and services. And hey, listen to my show, The 70s on Sunday, 12 to 7, each Sunday, on the internet at Radiomom.fm. Also, a big thank you to Santee Cooper Country in beautiful South Carolina. Lake Marion and Lake Moultrie, known as Santee Cooper Lakes, it's 171,000 acres. It's an ocean and 450 miles of shoreline, fantastic fishing, amazing golf. Go to their website, www.santeecoopercountry.org. Those are our underwriters that make it possible for Larry Batson's Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio. Our guest tonight on Larry Batson's Wild World, all the way from her home in Texas, Elaine McAfee Bender. And Elaine, I think I just had cold chills.
Me too, Larry. I'm dancing around the room here. I can't help it when I hear the Beatles. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Gosh, you know, sometimes when you don't listen to it for a while, you just forget how great the music was of 63, 64, 65, 66. Gosh, what a great era to grow up in.
Nothing like it. Nothing since, Larry. It was a magical time, and the music has never been the same. Nothing like 60s music.
I when we first had a chance to talk, and we were deciding that what a fantastic guest you would be, and then you informed me, you probably, to tell our listeners, Elaine was probably lived the life that every young teenage girl anywhere from 12 up wanted to live, because you had the opportunity to get up close and meet many of these stars of the British invasion and so forth. How did that all begin?
Well, it really all began with my starting a local chapter of the Beatles fan club. Like everybody else, I saw the Beatles on Ed Sullivan's show, and my life changed forever. Started a local chapter of a Beatles fan club, and soon got a charter from the official Beatles fan club in England. That was the first start. The second big thing that happened to me was becoming a professional go-go girl. Late 1964, early 1965. I worked in teen clubs for a radio station and musical enterprise here locally in Fort Worth. And that's really how it all started. My love for 60s music grew beyond the Beatles, but the Beatles have remained my favorite even till today, Larry.
Well, we all remember the Go-Go Girls from such great shows that we had on television, of course, all in black and white, Hullabaloo, Shindig. And they were kind of like the MTV of that era, except we only had a chance to enjoy them. I think they both were like half-hour shows. And there was another show, I think, what was it, that Paul Revere
hosted? Chivalry?
Where the Action Is or something. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But and the Go-Go Girls were such a strong part of it. I mean, it was such a great part of the era, in that whole musical. And as we were talking earlier, what an exciting time to grow up, because think of, we listen to these songs like we listen to She Loves You by the Beatles. We were there when it was first released, and we heard it on the radio for the first time, and we were like floored.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So
I was the same as everybody else. I heard the music on the radio, fell in love with it, and then when I saw the Beatles in February of 1964 on the Ed Sullivan Show, I was hooked, hooked forever, hopelessly in love with Paul McCartney.
So I bet what a thrill that must have been when you were contacted by their official fan club in England.
Oh, yes, certainly. I don't know how many people are aware of this, but they were actually very nice, very generous to their fan club leaders. And when they were touring in 1965, for instance, every local chapter leader was contacted and invited to the press conference and given a chance to meet the Beatles. They sent us lots of extra goodies, lots of magazines, autographed photographs, and recordings that were not generally available to the public. So there were the benefits of being that fan club leader. And, of course, it was an honor to be. I also had a little local newsletter, which I mailed out to all of my fan club members. I wrote articles concerning the Beatles and then consequently interviewed lots of other people from the British invasion bands as they came to town. And I actually did interviews and sent them out in my newsletter to the fan club members. Datebook Magazine actually got a hold of one of my article that I wrote when I interviewed Herman's Hermits,
mm-hmm.
and published it in their national magazine. And I was paid a whopping $50. So I really hit the big time with that interview. It was fun.
Well, the Herman's Hermits, is the people that may not know this, I say the youngsters, at one point they were, I don't say they were as big as the Beatles, but they were sure comparable as far as popularity.
Well, they were very popular at one time. No, they were certainly not as big as the Beatles, and but they were popular. You know, a lot of the bands had their, I was going to say 5 minutes of fame, but it was actually more than that.
Mm-hmm.
The Beatles remained, I think, on the top of everybody's list. But as these other groups came in, you know, the Dave Clark Five was another one that comes to mind, right behind the Beatles, and Herman's Hermits. Of course, they had mass appeal to the young girls,
mm-hmm.
and so they came out in droves to the concerts, bought their records, and so forth. There were a lot of other bands following on the heels of the Beatles who enjoyed success, and many of them, too, gave us recordings, which are still just wonderful pieces of music to this day.
Mm-hmm. So tell us about the first time that you had a chance to meet John, Paul, George, and Ringo.
Ah, all right. Well, I had an unofficial brush with them in 1964, but the big story is in 1965. That tour brought the Beatles to Houston in August of 1965 for two concerts, an afternoon and an evening show. And I was invited as part of the fan club president, and also because of my affiliation with KFJZ Radio, I also was able to wear that badge as well. Their sister station, KILT in Houston, was sponsoring that Beatles concert. KILT had me actually come in the afternoon and do a little interview there and talk about the Beatles. And then when it came time that evening before the actual meeting, it was chaos because the girls, the fans, broke through the police lines at the airport and actually just stormed the airplane. At that time, the airplane did not, you did not deplane directly into the building, into the airport there, and you would, the Beatles would have, you know, come down the stairs, walked across the tarmac and into the building. We were actually put in a reception line outside on the tarmac. I had a cowboy shirt for each of the Beatles that I was going to hand to them and introduce myself.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the chaos and the fear of, you know, really fear for their lives, they had to bring them off of the airplane on a catering truck, which was, you know, an elevated. Yes, it really was kind of scary. A lot of people were hurt in the trample and had to be, you know, taken to an area for, you know, triage and administering first aid. I jumped out of the way when I saw the girls coming, Larry.
Mm-hmm.
I knew this was going to be bad, and I just jumped really literally out of the way. They were pulling, police were pulling fans off of the wings of the airplane and just all over. And say, it was just really chaotic. And they brought the Beatles, you know, on this catering van. And I just remember stepping out and looking up and seeing Paul's sweet face looking down, and he was smiling and waving, and the others were just looking terrified. They brought them in, which I don't blame them. It was a very dicey situation. I thought that that would be the end of it and that there would be no meet and greet, but they had all of us who were still there and not scattered or receiving first aid, they had us come into the building, and they went ahead and did the meet and greet in one of the rooms there privately at the airport. Mm-hmm. And as I walked in, the first one I saw was Paul, who mm-hmm. is my favorite. He was so very nice, as he always is. He put you at ease immediately. Talked to me longer than I was supposed to actually be talking to any of them. He told me I was gorgeous, which, you know, to any 15-year-old girl, I mean, that's it. I'm set for life now. This is, it was wonderful to hear that. But he loved his shirt. You know, he was very excited to have the shirt. And they were all very, very nice, very gracious. The others were obviously tired. They were, you know, probably still a little frightened from the stampede. And they were, I think, just ready to get it over with and, you know, call it a night. But they were still very nice to me. And Paul asked me about the fan club. He asked me about go-go dancing. As I was led out because my time was up, he asked me to wait. And I waited just outside the door. Now, I'm a 15-year-old girl, remember, and he's,
right.
I think, 22 years old. And it was absolutely nothing inappropriate. He was very, very nice. He's very friendly, very interested in his fan club leaders. And they did bring me back in. And I did get to talk with them a little more privately this time. There were still people lingering around, but we actually had a nice little chat, which probably lasted all of 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, it was just a gift. And I got a hug, and I got a kiss on the cheek from Paul. And I swore I would never wash my face again, but of course I've had to wash my face, Larry, a time or two over the years. But
yeah.
But they were all very very nice, and I was most impressed, especially looking back and thinking how many people they meet.
Mm-hmm.
Or they did at the time, every day they had to go through these meet and greets to be so nice as they were and giving of their time. And, especially Paul.
Yeah.
He, you know, he just immediately put me at ease, and it was wonderful. It was one of the highlights, actually, of my life. I still adore him. I'm his biggest fan, and he knows it.
I'll bet. Our guest tonight, Elaine McAfee Bender, we're talking the British Invasion, the music of the 60s. It's already been fantastic. We're going to take a short break. Folks, you're listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio. Here's a hot topic about our wildlands and living with the natural role of fire.
Yard work is not just a matter of pride when you live in the wildland urban interface. It's also about survival. Here are some FireWise tips that can help protect your home from wildland fire. Prune your trees 6 to 10 feet above the ground. Remove dead leaves and branches and dispose of them before fire season. Water your lawn regularly and store firewood away from the house. Be prepared for a fire emergency by having a plan for your family and pets. Learn more at our website, and then sit back and enjoy. You worked for it.
This hot topic was made possible by the Teresa and H. John Hines III Foundation. Learn more about the natural role of fire, how to protect your community, and get the latest fire information. Visit the National Interagency Fire Center website at NIFC.gov. That's NIFC.gov.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
In the forest near the side of the road.
No need for alarm, sir. The forest is where bears live.
But this was no ordinary bear.
No ordinary bear?
Yeah, one second I'm having a smoke taken in the view. Next thing I know, I am face to face with Smokey Bear.
Let me guess, Smokey had a tip for you.
He did. He must have seen me toss my cigarette on the ground. He told me never to do that because it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
He's a smart bear. Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans? That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
That's what Smokey said. I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous, and you're not.
Good point.
Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Welcome back to Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio. Once again, here's your host, Larry Batson.
Hello, everyone. This is Larry Batson. You are listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on this premium and fantastic network known as Blog Talk Radio. We want to tell everyone next week on the program, Billy Henshey will join us, and I think probably Elaine will remember Dino, Desi, and Billy. And he was the Billy. Oh, absolutely. Well, he's going to be on the program next week, and he just finished producing a fabulous DVD about the late Carl Wilson. We're going to talk about that. Also, his experiences as they were kind of a one-hit wonder, but they were around for a little while, and that'll be next week, Billy Henshey. We want to tell everyone that Larry Batson's Wild World is made possible by several underwriters, such as the iKidsFishing.com. It is the first fishing show in the USA starring kids teaching kids how to fish. 40 million fishermen spending $45 billion a year. Boy, the iKids Fishing Show is a keeper. More info at We Want You Cottages on their website at www.wewantyou.com. They're located on Chautauqua Lake in western New York, and it is one of America's finest fishing resorts and also producing this fantastic show called iKids Fishing. Also, a big thank you to Tire Service Plus and owner Jerry Jones, taking care of America's auto maintenance needs. They keep our animal truck on the road traveling thousands of miles with our wild animal ambassadors. Give them a call, 317-243-0700. And also McGregor Mountain Lodge in beautiful God's Country, Estes Park, Colorado, on the boundaries of Rocky Mountain National Park. And I'm telling you, folks, you need to head out there. If you've never been there, you should visit Rocky Mountain National Park, Estes Park, at least once in your lifetime. Go to their website at info@McGregorMountainLodge.com. Those are underwriters that make it possible for Larry Batson's Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio and have such amazing, wonderful guests as, such as Elaine McAfee Bender. So you met the Beatles, you got kissed and hugged, and you lived every young teenage girl in that era's dream.
Yes, Larry, I did. I met a lot of nice people during the 60s. The Beatles were the best. There's just no doubt about it. But there were many other musicians and musical groups, too, who came through town and that I had the pleasure to meet. Some of these shows I would actually go-go dance with our local bands as opening acts. Mm-hmm. And when I wasn't dancing in the shows, I was also a hostess in the hospitality room for KFJZ. So I was able to meet a lot of the musical celebrities that way as well. You say it was a teen girl's dream, and I suppose in many ways it was, but at the time when you're living this life, I was just doing the things that I enjoyed, and that was being in the middle of music, loved music, still do, and dancing. It wasn't as big of a deal at the time as it is now, and I am totally surprised. I think I've shared this with you, that there is so much interest today in 60s music and the 60s scene and the 60s way of life. Until about 3 or 4 years ago, I had no idea that folks younger than ourselves are just mesmerized by stories of life in the 60s. I'm still just surprised that anyone wants to hear my stories.
Well, I think for a while in the 80s, the Beatles and the 60s music became, uncool. And it kind of drifted away, but here in the late 90s and the 2000s, it's, in fact, I have my nephew who's becoming a doctor, and he took a rock and roll course at Indiana University. And when I told him about some of the 60s bands, he said, oh, yes, we studied all about them. And, we've had on the show, we've had Dave Davies from the Kinks, and we've had on Al Jardine with the Beach Boys, who basically were all part of this. Of course, the Beach Boys were an American band. And they said they really, after looking back, they wish they had, I don't know how I should put this, savored the moment more. They didn't realize how special it was at the time. And years later, that's when they really started to appreciate it. Now, one of my favorite bands of the 60s, and you said that you had the opportunity to meet them in previous conversations we had, was the Dave Clark Five.
Oh, yes. The Dave Clark Five actually came just immediately behind the Beatles. And in fact, were they not the first band to knock the Beatles out of the number one position with Glad All Over?
They were. In fact, I remember that American Bandstand with Dick Clark when he played that song, and it had done just that. In fact, I think it knocked I Want to Hold Your Hand out of the number one position.
Ah.
And it was a powerful song.
It was. Anyone that challenged the Beatles or knocked the Beatles off the pedestal were not going to be my favorite group by any means, but I did like them. And when they came to town in concert, I did get my press pass, and I did get to meet them at a local session, an interview. Now, I didn't talk to them very long, not like I did with Herman's Hermits, but they were very nice to everyone there. Mike Smith, I believe his name, the keyboard player, is the one that really stands out in my mind is talking to me the most and being very cordial. And I had free passes, for seats to see the concert, and they were excellent in concert. I've got to say, they did put on a good show. I enjoyed them a whole lot. Yeah, they were a good band. I don't think they were around a real long time, but they did put out some good hits.
Well, they did, and I always heard that they were so loud for that era?
Well, you know, I guess I do recall them being loud a little bit. Mm-hmm. They didn't strike me at the time as being louder than everyone else. But, you know, you got to remember when the Beatles first were doing concerts, there were not the equipment was not what it became over the years in the 60s, and a lot of the monitors were just not there when the Beatles mm-hmm. played. And that was part of the reason they were so overpowered with the girls and the screaming. And, you know, as we moved along in the 60s, the equipment showed up as well. I think the first concert I went to that I really was just blown out of my seat with the powerful music was Jimi Hendrix.
Oh, yeah.
Now, that had those Marshall amps that were just stacked up to the ceiling. And, you know, but that had to be, gosh, I'm thinking 68 maybe before mm-hmm. he showed up.
Mm-hmm.
But as we went along in the 60s, yes, Larry, the music did get much louder at the concerts.
Well, I can still remember when the Beatles played the Indiana State Fair in, the, I believe it was September of 1964, that they had the promoter had to provide their amps, and they basically sang over the hockey speakers, and there were no monitors, and the mics were not amped.
Mm-hmm.
So any recordings mm-hmm. that were of any good quality at all is an absolute miracle, because they had their backs up against the wall when it came to playing these shows.
Oh, yes, yes, absolutely. You know, I've often hoped that if I could ever turn back time, that would be one of the changes that I would make personally, would have, you know, monitors and better equipment for the Beatles live, because we were not able to experience them live really at any point when they toured because of that handicap of not having the powerful equipment. Can you imagine, Larry, what it would be like if we had had, say, those Marshall amps and, you know, the mics monitored? Gosh, we could have had so much more live entertainment out of the Beatles.
They probably would have continued touring. Because my understanding, what I've read about it, is that they were so simply bored because they thought no one could hear them. Basically, Ringo would bob his head because the other Beatles couldn't hear his drums. That's how they knew what beat to stay on. And they couldn't hear each other sing. So if there's any cohesiveness in the harmonies or anything as far as the vocals, it was just because they were amazing. That's what it basically boils down to. One of the most interesting stories that we had told in previous conversations was your opportunity, and you mentioned it moments ago, of Herman's Hermits.
Oh, yes. Yes, that was such a fun time, and that had to be, I believe, 1966.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a freshman in high school at that time, either a freshman or a sophomore. And, you know, we had the passes to go to the interview at the Blackstone Hotel in downtown Fort Worth, Texas. And my friends and I went. I had three friends who we all worked on the Beatles fan club together. And we went to as many of the interviews as we could when they would allow, you know, all four of us to actually attend. And Herman's Hermits were not just mega huge. I believe this was their first tour. And so all four of us were able to go and to do the interviews, which was a lot of fun. But what you have to remember, Larry, is these guys were not much older than myself. I mean, they were, I believe Carl Green, the bass player, was 17.
Wow.
They were very young, and we were around their age. So when they saw us, it was like, hey, there's girls our age. Let's hang out. And, you know, it was just a bunch of, we were just a bunch of kids together. They invited us to hang around and to go to the pool. There was a rooftop cool. And, of course, anybody from England, when they come to Texas, they want to get out into that pool because they that's something that they don't get to do very often in England where the weather is not so warm. And so we spent literally the from the late morning until late afternoon with them on the rooftop pool.
Oh.
Now, we were in our I was in my little beetle boot shoes and my little, you know, mod dress and of course they're jumping in and out of the pool and but you know it was fun just talking about, you know, their lives as teenagers in England opposed to our lives here in the United States. They were just as shocked about their rise to fame, you know, as anyone. They couldn't believe that what was happening to them. I believe, you know, Herman or Peter was the only one who was any sort of professional musician and actor at the time when they put the band together. But we were just a bunch of kids having fun. I got splashed, thrown into the shallow end of the pool. I have a photograph of me wet and everything from being thrown in the pool. And we had much fun together, took some photographs. I continued to take notes all afternoon. And as I mentioned previously, tonight, Datebook Magazine heard about my interview and my write-up in my local newsletter from one of my fan club members and offered me $50 to print it. And $50 was a lot of money back then in 1966, Larry.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, that's a lot of money. It's a nice sum right now, to tell you the truth.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. But it was a fun time. They were our age, and we just had fun hanging out together. And then I enjoyed, you know, the concert was good. Lots of screaming girls, which I don't enjoy actually. I like to hear the music, but. I think it all went very well. It was one of the better concerts I think that I've attended, you know, all throughout the 60s, and I've been to many. I truly have.
Well, next to the Beatles and Herman's Hermits, did you have a favorite of all these bands that you had a chance to interview or get to know?
Gosh, you know, there are so many that I like. I don't know if I could put them in any sort of order on the spot like this, Larry. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, the zombies were amazing in concert and very, very nice people. I actually danced in a show with Beach Boys. I danced with the local band. I wasn't dancing on stage when the Beach Boys were on stage, but they were the headliner, and there was the Love and Spoonful and Chad and Jeremy.
Yes.
And in fact, who were just excellent as well. I had a chance to, you know, spend some time talking to the Beach Boys because they were last on in the hospitality room. And this is just a little funny story. Mike Love didn't particularly like any of the food that was being offered to the musical guests, and he asked, "Would I go out and because they were selling." At the concession stands, they were selling hot dogs. So he gave me money to go buy hot dogs. And it was humorous because he handed me a $20 bill or something, and I came back with all this change, and he told me to keep the change.
Oh.
And I said, "Oh, no, sir, I can't keep – no, I can't keep your money." I was trying to give him back the change, and he looked around at the others in the room, including some of the other Beach Boys, and said, "Oh, can you believe this? This is a female over here who doesn't want to take my money. Now, this is really different." but they were very nice. Some of them had their, you know, their wives and significant others with them, as did the Loving Spoonful. These people were all very, very nice. And as you said, the Beach Boys are American, but they deserve every bit of respect, you know, that we give to the British Invasion groups as well. Excellent musicians, excellent band. nobody liked them either. You know, and I saw the Rolling Stones in 1965 with Brian mm-hmm. Jones.
Oh.
And, yes. Here, right, in Fort Worth, Texas, at Will Rogers Coliseum. And Brian Jones was probably the one person I love the most next to Paul McCartney. Just, you know, not only just a good-looking guy, but he was a brilliant musician.
Yes, he was.
I could not take my eyes off of him. In fact, he, I thought, was light years above his other bandmates. And I know people will argue with me, and I mean no disrespect to any of the other of the Rolling Stones, but Brian Jones was such a unique talent. I wish he had lived longer, and I could have seen him actually perform with musicians who were more his equal, because he was such a fine musician. You know, another, well, now this is an American band. I saw the Byrds.
Oh, yes.
Oh, another just tremendously wonderful band of which there has been no equal to, as far as their unique sound as well. Let's see, in 1967, I met the Doors, which was interesting.
Oh, well, tell us about that, because, you know, Jim Morrison has
some problems.
Problems, right, but so many stories on the the strangeness, the eccentric behavior of Jim Morrison.
Yes, you know, Jim Morrison was a talent. I mean, I don't think anybody will argue about that. But I guess there was a lot of strangeness. How much of it was Jim Morrison's personality and how much was, you know, the influence of substances? I have no idea. But in the summer of 1967 in Fort Worth, Texas, there was an event called the Mardi Gras Flower Power Festival. It went on for an entire week, and there were lots and lots of big names. Huge event. Writers of 60s music history include this event actually in some of the books. I'm trying to collect these books myself, but this was a huge event. KFJZ Radio, who I worked for, were the ones sponsoring, and I was the head dancer by 1967. I had worked my way up to that coveted position. Mm-hmm. I was in charge of the girls as far as scheduling them every day to dance with local bands during the day, and then in the evening, the big names would come in, and we would have to clear out of the dressing rooms so that the musical celebrities could, you know, have their own area and get our stuff out. Well, and part of my job, of course, was being, you know, hospitality hostess, and I remember going into the dressing room where Jim Morrison was, and he was literally leaning up against the wall, staring into space. You know, I asked him if he wanted, you know, a soft drink, water, anything that I could go get for him, and he did smile at me, and then he shook his head. He didn't say anything to me, but you know, that seemed odd to me at the time, because most of these people were very friendly and happy that someone was willing to go step and fetch and bring food and you know, beverage for them. And it did seem strange, but what I saw afterwards, when, you know, I was still around the area and hear other local musicians and their girlfriends and so forth would come in and go, "Oh, y'all are so fantastic, Jim Morrison." And he would just stare off into space and not answer anybody. And at one point, he actually told them to get away in no uncertain terms that aren't very polite. And I do remember that when he was on the stage, too, there was all sorts of strange and questionable behavior. And I don't want to say anything, you know, bad about him, because he certainly was a talent, and lots of people love him and, you know, respect him, and whatever else was going on, you know, I don't know. But it was very different, I must say. And but the rest of the Doors, though, were not that way at all. They were very down to earth. And, in fact, I remember one of them even coming to me and apologizing for Jim Morrison's being unfriendly. Yeah, coming and just kind of saying, hey, you know, please don't take offense. You know, we really do appreciate you having us here and everything. Yeah, they were all very nice. But it was rather bizarre, as you say. But the Doors, I mean, bottom line is, good band, wrote some, you know, good tunes. Great albums.
Yes, absolutely.
So, mm-hmm. Oh,
all rather
definitely.
Dark, but rather dark, but they definitely classics, and do deserve to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which they are. And we love the Doors.
Oh yeah, absolutely. There's so many good ones. You know, even following on the hill. You know, the British Invasion was huge. Lots and lots of good music that came from, you know, from England, and then the American bands too. It just, the '60s was truly a magical time, and a wonderful time for music. There was so much good music starting to come from every direction. And maybe I'm just an old person living in the past, but
mm-hmm.
But there really has been nothing like 60s music since. I mean, there's nothing that equals
what we had
musically.
It was all so special, all so original. I mean, the sound was like, before that we were listening to Bobby Sherman and Bobby Rydell, and all of a sudden, I Want to Hold Your Hand, Yeah, 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 Glad All Over, You Really Got Me. It just goes on and on. It was so much different music that it just basically grabbed the youngsters and took a hold, and it hasn't released since. All those youngsters grew up old like us, and we still love it.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. We may be old, but we're still, you know, but we're still, most of us are, who have stayed active in the arts, those who still appreciate and listen to 60s music, I think we all still have that young attitude, though, that sets us apart from everyone else.
Absolutely. Well, tell everyone, our worldwide audience, what Elaine McAfee Bender's doing now. What's your life all about?
What am I doing now? Well, one thing that I did was I made a career out of dance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I started dancing when I was about 2 years old, and I have stayed in dance, musical theater. I teach dance. I am a dance instructor, and I love it. I teach at a local dance studio, recreational classes and competition teams. I coach in dancing. I teach at a variety of workshop and conventions all around the United States. So I have stayed active in dance and musical theater.
Well, we hope many of your students had a chance to tune in tonight or download it in the future, because I'm sure that they're going to have a gazillion questions for their instructor on music of the 60s. It's been a fantastic hour, Elaine. Gosh, what a delightful person you are, and it's such a pleasure to have you share these great memories with us tonight.
Oh, thank you, Larry. It's absolutely my pleasure. Thank you for having me on your show.
Well, I told you, Dr. Day, what a fantastic hour it would be.
Unbelievable. You know, I think our listeners all around the world will say, Elaine is not only good, but she's fab, too.
That's
thank
right.
you for all your
and
stories,
Marvie.
Elaine.
And Marvie. Thank you.
We'd like to also thank our individual underwriters. You can become a supporter of this broadcast. Go to LarryTheAnimalGuy.com and contact yours truly, and we will tell you how easy it is to be an individual underwriter, such as Jeannie Harold, all the way from Martinsburg, West Virginia. $100 a year, and your name will be broadcast on each edition of Larry Batson's Wild World, and we have thousands of downloads because we know tens of thousands of people listen to this show each week. And enjoy such guests such as Elaine McAfee Bender. What a fantastic show. And we want to tell everyone next week on the program, Billy Hinshie from Dino, Desi, and Billy will be talking 60s again, and plus his new projects with Carl Wilson, the late Beach Boy, who was such a musical genius. Have a great week, everybody. A big thank you to Melissa Hovey and Wayne Larson. Of course, Dr. Henry Day. You've been listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. Good night, everybody.
Thanks for listening this week to Larry Batson's Wild World. Be sure to join us again next week at 10 p.m. for more of the latest outdoor and wildlife news and information, along with great tales from your host, world-renowned wildlife expert, Mr. Larry Batson. Tune in again next week for another exciting edition of Larry Batson's Wild World. Larry Batson's Wild World is a Batson Wildlife Educational Services production in association with Blog Talk Radio.